To WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania.
Welcome to House of Cards, Lafayette College's U.S. election pre-show. I'm Chris Burns.
And I'm Frankie Aluzzi, and this is the first edition of the House of Pards radio broadcast, airing at 6 o'clock on September 20th, 2016, and we're really excited to get started.
Every Tuesday until the election, we'll be filling you in on news stories, polls, and updates about the presidential and congressional elections.
We'll also be bringing you interviews with important people surrounding the election, always centered around the Lehigh Valley and Lafayette College.
This will culminate in a live broadcast on PBS 39 on election night. Together with PBS 39, Lafayette College's Policy Studies Department has been crafting a presentation that will combine the efforts of Lafayette College students, professors, and a variety of talent around the Lehigh Valley.
On November 8th, we'll be broadcasting on PBS 39 from Lafayette College, giving you up-to-the-second information on the elections, as well as analysis from students and experts alike.
We hope you'll join us then. In the meantime, we'll be providing an inside look into how this broadcast comes together.
So, Chris, can you tell me a little bit more about how this broadcast is coming about? How is our class set up? How are we preparing for November? Just a general overview.
So, we're both in the Elections 2016 class here at Lafayette College. It's under the Policy Studies Department, and through that, we are essentially putting together the broadcast. So there are about between 20 and 30
students in our class, and each of us has roles, whether it's marketing or marketing executive producers, what we're doing with the radio show. Everyone has a role, and we really come together as a team, and eventually we'll have a broadcast on election night that'll be really good.
Yeah, so we have a really good team set up, and tonight we're actually going to be meeting with two of the vital components of this election team. Later tonight, we're going to be meeting with Ben Genesek, our political director, but first up will be Kayla McGee, our director of marketing, who we talked to earlier today. Thanks for joining us today. Kayla, what's your position on the broadcast team?
I'm the director of marketing, promotions, and event planning.
Awesome. So what does that consist of?
Basically, I'm marketing the broadcast, and I'm getting more people involved in the broadcast and planning events so people can become more politically involved and know more about the broadcast, know more about like the political process and candidates running.
Very cool. So who's on the team that you're working with?
So for our social media team, we have Katie Martinez, Carla Talley, and Lauren Hughes, and then we have Margie Lewis and Anna Vinsky, and they're doing the promo video.
Very cool. So what are you most excited about your marketing campaign so far? What do you think is the big flagship parts of your campaign?
I think I'm most excited about getting people more involved in the process and just, you know, sharing, like, the information that we have and, like, getting people more politically engaged because we want everyone to know, like, what the election is about and, like, who they should be voting for, because I know a lot of people are very, like, skeptical about the candidates and don't know who to vote for. So I think it's a really good election to, like, be able to have, like, first-time voters and, like, they're still trying to figure out who they should vote for because obviously it's not, like, a traditional election. So I think that's what I'm most excited about.
How are you using social media in order to achieve that?
Well, we're doing an election forecasting competition, and basically we want everyone to follow us on social media so they can learn more about that, and then we post, like, updates about, like, events we're holding or just, like, political news, political updates. So we're using social media to do, like, draw people in with the election forecast, but then once they're there, they can see different things about the broadcast that are going on and events going on throughout, like, the political process.
All right. And what promotional events have you done and will you do on campus in order to get out more news about the broadcast?
We had a voter registration table in Farrenon. We had that last Friday, and we're going to have another one before October 11th, which is the last day to register to vote. We're also having an information session for other people who want to get involved with the broadcast this coming Sunday. And we're doing a viewing party on the election night.
Very cool. Anything last that you'd like to leave with our listeners before we bid you adieu?
Follow us on social media.
Great. Where can our listeners follow you guys?
On Twitter and Facebook. You can follow us on the Policy Studies Department. And on Instagram and Snapchat, you can follow us at LoftUS16 Election.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Kayla.
Thank you.
Much thanks, Kayla, for that important insight. Coming up next will be Ben Janicek, our political director, who we also talked to earlier today. Thanks for joining us. So, Ben, you're political director. What does that exactly entail?
Yeah, so political director of this broadcast, we're monitoring the races from president, Senate, House races, gubernatorial races. We're keeping track of them. We're watching the poll numbers. We're seeing important issues that are coming up in the race, and we're just tracking them all the way to election night so we have a good read on where they've been and where they're at.
So the most important news that's going on in the presidential race right now is the shrinking gap between Secretary Clinton and Mr. Trump. Explain why that is happening.
Yeah, so coming out of the Democrat National Convention, she was up in one poll. She was up by as many as 14 points. She was up between 8 and 10 on the average coming out of that convention. Candidates always historically get a pretty good convention bounce, and hers was more than average. She got a pretty good lead over Trump. So part of the narrowing as of today in the Real Clear Politics average of polls, she's up by 1 point now. So Trump's reduced that lead by 7 or 8 points. Part of it is just natural tightening after the conventions. You know, candidates usually lose their lead. They're getting less favorable press coverage. They're not in the news all the time. Out of her convention, she got favorable reviews, so she went up. So part of that is just natural tightening that you see every presidential race. And part of it is she's had a bad couple of weeks. The basket of deplorables comment didn't get her great press. When she made reference to half of Trump supporters as a basket of deplorables, that wasn't a good thing for her campaign. Then the health scare that ended up being pneumonia, and her she wasn't very transparent with how she went about disclosing that news. That didn't get her, because that just feeds into her reputation, as that she's not very transparent, she's not very open about what's going on. So that didn't help her. And then Trump's been more disciplined over the last couple of weeks. He hasn't been saying the kinds of things he used to be saying. He's been more on message. He's been, with the health thing, he didn't say anything wild. He just said, I hope she gets better and gets back on the trail. So that's helped his numbers a lot. And now we have almost a tied race. So it's getting tight.
So turning back to Secretary Clinton's health scare, do you think that the bigger issue with that was her actual health, or was it her lack of disclosing what was going on with her health?
I think the bigger issue is the lack of disclosure. First, she had that cough for forever where it flared up, and she had, 2-3 minutes, she coughed and couldn't talk, and she kept saying it's allergies, and then they came out and said, oh, she just overheated when she almost fainted, and she had to leave early. She just overheated. And then she didn't let the press come with them, which is only for emergencies. You don't let the press come with you, and they shut them out. Nobody knew where she was for 90 minutes. A simple saying, she had to leave. She was diagnosed with pneumonia a few days ago. It's very treatable. She'll be fine. She just needs to rest a little bit. I don't think anybody would have had a big deal with that. But just not telling people, then hiding it after, you get bad symptoms, I think it fed into a problem she already has, which is lack of trustworthiness. So that was the biggest deal.
Looking ahead to, I believe, next week's debate,
yep.
What are you expecting out of that debate?
The big thing is, you set yourself up, you set expectations. Candidates always want to set low expectations and then try to overperform. So, I think Trump has done, I don't think Trump's expectations are that high just because of the things people are used to him saying. So I think there's room there for him to do a good job, but I think generally people are expecting Secretary Clinton to do a better job of the debate because, she's the more seasoned politician. She's been in there before. She's ran in 08. She did a ton of debates there. And then again in this past cycle. So, I think if you're saying who's the favorite, I think she's a little bit of a favorite. But then again, if she doesn't perform well, that could hurt her if she doesn't meet her expectations. If she wins slightly, but people expect her to win by a lot. It's all about the expectation game. So we'll see, but I think she's expected to perform a little better.
So with two, with both main party candidates being highly disliked by the majority of the nation, where are third party candidates in this election season?
Right now, they're pulling on average about 12% together. Jill Stein, the Green Party, and then Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party. He's been between 8 and 10. She's, you know, around 2 and 3. You need 15% to get a debate, and so Gary Johnson has not made the first debate, which is in 6 days next Monday. And that's, I mean, that's going to hurt him. There's no question. He's not going to get that face time in front of, you know, tens and tens of millions of people. So he needs 15%, and he's been a little more than halfway there, but he's not getting there. But it's certainly, you know, 12% is a decent chunk of the electorate. And they've actually been hurting Secretary Clinton more than they've been hurting Mr. Trump, which is has a lot to do with young voters going towards them who are generally Democrat voters but are now disenfranchised a little with Secretary Clinton. They're going now for third party. So they definitely have a bigger role in this election than they did in last election, but still not big enough yet to have a presence on the debate stage.
Now, looking at some key congressional races, what congressional races in the House of Representatives and in the Senate have really caught your eye?
Well, in the Senate, it's going to be really tight. I mean, in the Senate right now, there are 34 seats up for election. In the current makeup is 54 GOP seats, 46 Democrat seats. So Democrats need 4 seats in the White House or 5 seats without the White House to take control of the Senate. It's going to be tight. 24 of those 34 are Republican seats that they're defending, and 10 are Democrat seats. Right now, you know, you look at different forecasters, they're putting it, you know, 50-50, maybe 51-49 Republican, maybe 51-49 Democrat. But the Republican senators overall have been running much better in the polls than Trump has. You know, in Florida and Iowa and Ohio, these key battleground states, Republican senators there, Rubio, Grassley, Portman, consistently get higher percentages in the polls than Trump. So it's a big fear was Trump was going to pull down Republican Senate candidates. It hasn't been happening yet. We'll see if it does happen. But it's looking to be a very, very tight race in the Senate. It could be 50-50. It could hinge on who gets the White House. And then the House, the current makeup is 247 Republican, 187 Democrat. Democrats need 30 seats to get a majority. That's going to be a tough haul. You know, Real Clear Politics, they have Republicans at 231 seats and Democrats at 189 seats. They're projecting that, and then you have 15 toss-ups. So you only need 218 for a majority. So Republicans right now, if they were watching Hill today, they'd have a majority. It'd be slimmer than the one they currently have, but they would have it. Democrats need to flip a lot of seats right now that are in the lean or likely Republican category to have a chance. It's very likely that Republicans will have a reduced majority, but they should still have a majority in the House.
And then looking at local elections, what's going on in the Pennsylvania, New Jersey area that might be key this election season?
Well, there are a couple congressional races in Pennsylvania that most of them are safe. The PA-8 race is a toss-up, and the PA-6 race is a likely Republican. Those are the only two races that are not solid one way or the other. In the 17th district, Matt Cartwright is the incumbent Democrat. He's facing Matt Connolly, who ran in 2014 against him. Cartwright beat him by 14 points in 2014. Every rater of this election says it's a pretty safe Democrat. So I don't think we'll have a competitive election in our district, but you know, just south of us, we will have a competitive one, and a huge one is the Pennsylvania Senate race. Pat Toomey, the Republican incumbent, versus McGuinty, the Democrat challenger. That's going to be a tight race that could very well decide who makes up the Senate. And Pennsylvania, obviously, is a swing state, and the presidential race could decide the White House. So Pennsylvania is going to play a big role in this election, for sure.
What makes Pennsylvania such a swing state when it comes to the Senate and the presidential race as well?
Their demographics, they have you know, the Philly area, the Pittsburgh area, very very populated, very heavily Democrat, but then the rest of the state is very red. It's not as populated, but it's very red. It's been it's been shifting more to the Republican side in the last 4 years in terms of voter registration and new people registering to vote. Republicans have been doing a good job there. Toomey's probably running a little better than Trump, as has been the trend with other Senate races. He's, you know, right around tied with McGinty, maybe a couple points behind her, where Trump is. He was a couple weeks ago, he was down by 10. Now he's down by somewhere between 5 and 7 points in Pennsylvania. So he's had the lead there, but he's still down a little bit. And Toomey's right around tied. And, you know, Pennsylvania's going to be definitely one to watch here.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
That was Ben Janicek, our political director, joining us. Thank you very much again, Ben. Now for some recent election news. So we have two main stories today. The first is on the Las Vegas billionaire Sheldon G. Adelson. So he has hinted throughout the campaign that he would donate almost as much as $100 million to pro-Trump super PACs. He's repeatedly said this. But actually recently this past weekend, he ended up only donating about $5 million to Trump's campaign and instead donating a significant amount of money, about $100 million, to congressional elections. So Republican congressional elections got the money as opposed to Donald Trump's campaign, which could have large impacts considering that Trump has actually only raised $127.6 million total compared to Secretary Clinton's $435.5 million. As for the second story, both of the candidates, both Secretary Clinton and Donald Trump, responded to the bombings over the weekend. And they responded in pretty different ways. So I'm going to read some quotes first from Secretary Clinton and then secondly from Donald Trump on their responses to the bombings. Quote from Secretary Clinton, ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack in Minnesota, and this should steel our resolve to protect our country and defeat ISIS and other terrorist groups. I have laid out a comprehensive plan to do that. This includes launching an intelligence surge to help identify and thwart attacks before they can be carried out, and to spot lone wolf attackers. We also need to work with Silicon Valley to counter propaganda and recruitment efforts online. Americans have faced threats before, and our resilience in the face of them only makes us stronger. I am confident that we will once again choose resolve over fear. And Clinton, Secretary Clinton continued, quote, we're going after the bad guys, and we're going to get them, but we're not going after an entire religion. We know that Donald Trump's comments have been used online for the recruitment of terrorists, end quote. So that's a direct not necessarily an attack, but a critique of Donald Trump's comments in the past. And then Donald Trump also commented on the attacks over the weekend by saying, quote, today, Hillary Clinton showed again that she will say anything and blame anyone to shift attention away from the weakness she showed as Secretary of State. The Obama-Clinton doctrine of not taking ISIS seriously enough has emboldened terrorists all over the world. They are hoping and praying that Hillary Clinton becomes president so they can continue their savagery and murder. And then he made a bunch of other comments referring to the specific bombings and continued to state that, quote, we will not allow political correctness and soft on terror, soft on crime policies to threaten our security and our lives. And then lastly, on the O'Reilly factor, Donald Trump finished off his comments by saying, quote, honestly, whatever it is, I'm not going to use the term Muslim. I'm saying that you're going to have to profile. We're going to have to start profiling. So Donald Trump has said that he would advocate profiling in the case of these particular attacks and attempting to prevent them. Coming up next, we have our editorial section brought to you by Chris Burns.
Whether you are a Democrat or Republican, there is a reason you chose to align yourself with that party. As a child, your parents brought you up a certain way, teaching you the values that dictate the basic platform of each party. Of course, your parents aren't the only reason. Your politically conscious friends are pushing you a little in one direction or the other. While these two influences have a strong impact and rightfully should, news sources should not have that impact. For a politically active and engaged society, the voting electorate should be educated on the different parties' platforms, issues that surround that platform, and the party leaders. However, is it possible to learn anything new if you select your news source based on what you want to hear? Primarily focusing on MSNBC and Fox News, these two channels have been pulling the U.S. to the political left and right, respectively, for years. While Fox News has driven a blatantly anti-Obama news campaign, MSNBC rarely puts out anything but anti-Trump news articles and TV segments. These two media outlets, along with other partisan sources of the news, portray themselves as putting out factual information. Is it news if you only attack one side of the issue, though? Where's the basic search for the truth that should be the predisposition for the news industry? While these two news channels may make themselves happy that they can push the agenda that they feel most strongly about, they do an injustice to the viewer. With the reputation of both channels being well known, the average viewer of both channels is going there to hear what they want to hear and see what they want to see. This process of consuming the news makes it impossible to engage with the other side of the issue, limiting the consumer's viewpoint to the one they choose. Now, an easy solution to this problem would have the MSNBC viewers and the Fox News viewers occasionally watch and pay attention to the other's news source. However, this wouldn't work as the sheltered and partisan news consumer would be appalled by the message they heard on the rival network. So with that solution out of the question, it comes down to these partisan information producers to self-correct. One of these days, the people that are running these outlets have to put out a piece of news that makes their viewers think. Fox News could produce a segment about the potential positive effect of Obamacare. MSNBC could run a story about how Donald Trump is empowering voters that have never had a chance to connect with a political candidate before. Every piece of news will lean a little in one direction. However, there is no reason to only produce news that strictly leans to the political left or right. If the partisan news outlets don't figure out a way to actually educate their viewers and readers, the news will lose its power as a producer of true information and will become a platform for beliefs to simply be reconfirmed.
Thank you very much for that, Chris. Thank you all for joining us today. We're looking forward to continuing to talk to you all each week as we lead up to Election Day.
We hope you enjoyed listening. If you have any suggestions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Make sure you follow us on Facebook at Lafayette College 2016 Election PBS Broadcast.
And on Instagram and Snapchat at LafUS16 Election. That's LAFUS. 16 Election.
And make sure to tune into the presidential debate on Monday night, September 26th. It's a big deal. And we'll be talking about it on Tuesday with various political experts. And have a great night and tune in next week, same time, 6 o'clock.